Hello everyone and welcome to The Entrepreneur's Journey. I'm Andy Bryan and today I'm delighted to bring to you another new guest which I'm really excited about sharing with you. You may have heard of her, Dr. Sean Duperron, who is, whereabouts are you based
now? I'm in Detroit, Michigan in the US, yeah.
Excellent, excellent. So today we're going to find out about your story and Project Forgive. And for those of you who don't know what Project Forgive is yet, I'm sure many of you do, it's definitely worth doing a search on Google. But we'll put all the links below in the description in the replay. So today we're going to uncover Sean's journey and story and uncover her journey to success from Project Forgive and even prior to the work she's done there. So welcome, Sean. Thanks again for joining me on the show. It's a real pleasure to have you back and joining us.
Thank you, Andy. My joy to be here.
So before we actually dive into your story, I always like to ask, tell us more about yourself and what you do today.
That's a loaded question. All right. In a nutshell, I'm a good gossip researcher. I've spent the last 10 years really focusing on this conversation of gossip and educating people about it. And usually when you think gossip, you think mean and nasty, but that's just not the case. The research shows that we're actually really good people and that mean nasty stuff is only about 5 to 7%. And so I spend a lot of time researching and applying gossip theory to good works like Project Forgive is our case study. We're reaching millions in social media now, causing global change around the conversation of leadership. And so what I'm doing today, I spend a lot of time training, spend a lot of time traveling and really promoting the conversation of leadership that focuses on collaboration, diversity, inclusion, compassion, and the conversation of forgiveness in the workplace. Because real leaders take risks, and you're going to screw up. When you're a leader, you're going to screw up. And the ones that really produce results and cause transformation are the ones that are able to dust their knees off, quickly forgive themselves, so you don't keep repeating the same mistakes over and over and over again. So bulk of my time is spent training.
Fantastic, fantastic. So now let's dive into your actual story itself. I'm actually quite happy today that I've heard your story of Project Forgive, but at the same time, I haven't really heard your other story of what led you to Project Forgive and even the work you did prior to that. And I know you've got a lot that you've done over the years. So let's first of all dive into the original world where you first started your adventure, where you started, where you first found your call to adventure of what you wanted to do, what you wanted to create. And often that's a place of pain and discomfort. We're not happy with our lives. And we want to create a shift or a change. And sometimes it's just a calling within us that wants to do something different, something new. So tell us more about, did you have a part in your life where you found that with yourself?
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting too, looking back now, I'm a 51-year-old grandma now, right? I'm Grandma Shawnee. And this conversation of forgiveness has been a theme throughout my whole life. So it's not surprising that I started a nonprofit on forgiveness. And really in that conversation of an inquiry of forgiveness as a journey, a skill, and educating people about the conversation of forgiveness. And many people know my story. I share it pretty openly. I come from an incest background. I was molested as a child. And, you know, being 51 now, I can say it's been a glorious journey. And not that I would ever wish incest or molestation on someone. That's not what I'm saying at all. It's that things happen to us and how you deal with them is how you deal with them. And I'm at the phase now where I see things happen for us that actually causes our growth in our hero's journey. And, and my hero's journey is about facing deep anguish, deep shame, deep pain, generational pain in my family system, and causing different things to happen with my children and my grandchildren now because of the work that I chose to do as my own hero and my own story. So forgiveness is a big conversation, not only when I was a small child and growing up, because I always felt like I had to forgive the adults around me, because you grew up in a dysfunctional family system. You've got crazy adults around you. That's just kind of how it works. And I say that without malice or even judgment at this point in my life. I've done a lot of work, you know, and it was the cards that I was dealt. And many of people listening, you're dealt certain cards. And so forgiveness has always been a big piece of that.
Yeah, I imagine that was very difficult at that time. I'm lucky enough to have not gone through that, but I've spoken to a few people over the years now who've gone through similar journeys. I imagine that was obviously difficult. Was did you ever have a fear or a worry of even like looking at a new path or a new vision, you know?
I'm sorry, say that again. Did I have a fear of looking at the past?
Looking at the future, having this vision of the future, because often we have that fear of moving out of this situation, you know.
Did you ever have any doubts about? Yeah, that's pretty common for coming from some kind of abuse background. And there's different ways that we go along our hero's journey. I know that's your theme, and I'm hoping that's okay to mention that as we go. We take on different roles. Like some of us, you know, I know lots of incest survivors. Some of us become very victim-y and never graduate from high school and, you know, get into drugs and addiction. That wasn't my path. My path was overachievement. Like, oh my gosh, if I can show you how valuable I am, because, you know, that'll make it worthwhile and that I'm okay, that it's okay to be alive. So my journey was more about achievement. And now at 51, I've accomplished so many things now. It's that journey feels pretty complete for me. I no longer need to have people say, oh, Sean, you're so awesome. You're so amazing. That used to be a driving force for me in my 20s and 30s, you know, and that's not a driving force anymore. Yeah. I've done a lot of work around that. Not to say that achieving isn't good, because, you know, I've achieved a lot of things. I'm sorry. What were you going to say?
No, that's fantastic. And obviously the reason I asked that question, because that everybody has the different coping mechanisms, you know, and ways of dealing with things. And it's incredible to see such a difference. And I imagine it's all about the perspective you had at that time. So you chose your perspective of achievement rather than maybe going down the self-destructive route of self-harm in many different ways.
Yeah, and I think anyone coming from any abuse, whether you had a rageaholic parent or you come from neglect, and neglect was a big one in my family too, so it doesn't have to be incest. It could even be a parent who's chronically ill. The same pain shows up in family systems, and self-harm shows up in all of these. Like for me, I've struggled with my weight my entire life. You know, I need some comfort, go eat a Reese's peanut butter cup to get some comfort. You know, so there's different ways that we self-harm or sabotage. And it shows up differently for folks. And the one thing I've always had though, is I've had this unstoppable belief that I could do it, whatever it was. I can do this. I can. I'm clear. Maybe I don't know how to do it now, and if I don't, I will figure it out. I've always had that oomph to me.
You'll find a way.
Yep.
Where there's no path, you'll find a way. Excellent. So, were there any key people in your life, any archetypes you could say, relating it back to the hero's journey again, that were key to your growth? You know, maybe a mentor, maybe someone that first of all gave you that inspiration to say, look, I know you've had this happen, but you too can create an amazing life.
You know, there's a few things that helped me on this journey. One of them was a book called Return to Love by Marianne Williamson, along with Gerald Jampolsky, Into the Light. I was like 19 years old. This is when I started going to see motivational speakers and knew that there was something available beyond my realm of paradigm in my family system. And I knew something else was available. So I really got into motivational speakers, which was the highlight of my life, because I'm kind of a motivational speaker now. Yeah. And I remember reading Gerald Jampolsky's book, and it gave me such a different perception on spirituality, really gave me some insight into how families operate, that it's not that deep. It's not really about me. It's really the heritage of the family systems. And then Marianne Williamson's book, Return to Love, actually, because I was mad at God for a long time, whatever you call him, God or her, God, Allah, Buddha, Goddess. Everyone has their own journey if they choose to go on a spiritual journey. It doesn't have to be called a spiritual journey, even in my book. And that book spoke to me because I grew up in very, very fundamental Baptist background that really had me not appreciate God, whatever that means. And so I had a lot of pain and anger at God. And Marianne Williamson's book shifted my perceptions on spirituality, looking at this notion of the distinction between love and fear, And that can be applied in everyday life. It's one of my basic tenets of everything that I train. I train corporations. I'm always looking at this conversation of love and fear, not the romantic love kind of thing. And not even in a spiritual way, more of in a pragmatic getting, you know, if you love your boss, you're going to have a better life. If you hate your boss, it's going to be harder. So applying those principles in real life. And the other thing is, the other thing that really made a difference for me, because I started in TV news, and that's where I started my career. And I remember being a single mother, because I was a single mom, and I had married an alcoholic, left an alcoholic. Alcoholism very prominent in my family system. And I was terrified. I was terrified to go to college. No one had ever even gone to university in my family system. And I was terrified. I always had that wherewithal, though. I can do this. I may not know how, and I'm scared to death. I'm still going to do it. And something that carried me through university and being a single mom and figuring out money, because, boy, money was horrible back then, too. It was hard. And I carried around the cassette. This is when you had cassettes. I didn't have an 8-track. I'm not that old. Had a cassette from the movie Field of Dreams. The whole premise, the hero's journey in that one is just fantastic. And the father in that, my father abandoned my family when I was little. And so father always represented a spiritual father to me in that movie. And I felt like coming home. And to me, spirituality is coming home to yourself. That's how I translate it. So carrying around that cassette tape, because I listened to that music in my car, I just would hear that music and I felt good. And even finishing my PhD recently, whenever I was in a tough spot writing, you know, research, I put in Field of Dreams, because as soon as I'm in Field of Dreams, I'm present, I'm happy, I feel loved and comforted. It's a beautiful memory for me.
Excellent. Well, I absolutely love that film. I've watched it about, must be 3 or 4 times. And, you know, I'm quite young. So it's, I mean, it was a 70s film, wasn't it?
It was in the 80s.
I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
So looking at some of the trials you faced to come to Project Forgive and even like some of the awards you've got, what were some of the trials and tribulations you came across along your journey, and what did you learn from them as you grow?
You know, there's so many. From being I'm remarried now. I've been with the love of my life for 20 years. We've been married 20 years. The whole parenting thing, step-parenting thing, there's a whole journey to that. And you know what I think I'd like to focus on is I'd like to focus on Project Forgive, because that's in the last 4 to 5 years. And there's been so many lessons learned, even as a 51-year-old grandmother. And when we launched this, for folks that don't know, we did a little video on a man named Gary Weinstein. His family was killed by a drunk driver, his 2 sons and his wife. And we knew this family very well. My children babysat his children. Judy, the woman, his wife who was killed, was my husband's business coach. And it was very striking, because the day that we heard that Gary's family had been killed, we also found out that the man who killed them is another dear family friend. And that was a significant occurrence. And that actually was like 9 years ago. And that changed me. It changed me in many ways. First of all, devastating what happened to that family. And knowing both families and knowing how exquisite and loving and kind both families are, it was a shocker. And I knew something significant was going to happen from this, in that both these families were that exquisite. I mean, they were exquisite people, both families. And so we ended up making a little 5-minute video on the conversation of forgiveness. And even the journey of making that 5-minute video, it took 3 videos before it went viral. And my background, my PhD is in gossip. You know, I started off at that. And we applied gossip theory, and there's many attributes to that, to make the video go viral. And it did go viral. And we didn't expect what happened, though. I knew this was a big deal. I knew it was a big deal the day that Gary's family was killed and finding out Tom, our other friend, had killed them. I just didn't know to the magnitude that it was, that this story would resonate with so many people. And especially Gary forgiving Tom in a really profound way, Not that it's very authentic. I mean, doesn't mean Gary, who lost his family, doesn't mean he didn't go through anger and grief and pain and agony. And to this day, you know, because people always ask me questions like, you know, do you forgive the man who molested you? Has Gary forgiven Tom? Well, the answer is it depends on what your definition of forgiveness is, because acceptance can also be a conversation of forgiveness. Because I just recently talked to Gary and graduation was coming for high school, and one of his sons would have been graduating from high school. And that time frame impacted him. He went into a lot of grief and a lot of pain and a lot of loss about not seeing his then 9-year-old graduate from high school. Actually, it moves me just sharing it. Like I get it. That would be hard.
Yeah.
And even as I'm saying it now, like he's constantly moving through grief and going through all the stages of forgiveness, because that's what forgiveness is. It's not all of a sudden you forgive and it's done. It's a journey. Yeah. Forgiveness is a journey. I'm not talking about when someone cuts you up on the freeway and you have to forgive them, like that can get over. I'm talking about life altering events, you know, cause we all have life. We all go through frickin' loss. We don't all get these loss. Yeah. And who are you going to be in that journey of it? And, how do you become masterful at the conversation of forgiveness so it doesn't stay in the anger mode and then eventually turn to bitterness? And that's when you're like, trying to get through life carrying around all those shackles, eh? It probably took us off topic, but.
No, I love you sharing that, because it is all about your journey to forgiveness and journey to Project Forgive and the work you're doing today. Just from what you're saying, I can see it as the layers you strip one layer behind and you undergo that process of forgiveness, and then something pops up. And I'd imagine an interesting question to ask, but when you heard about Gary and the situation, did it in some ways regress you back to the previous time, so that you had to reevaluate forgiveness again, maybe from your past?
Oh, you're so funny. I have been reevaluating forgiveness since we started this project 4 years ago. It's so funny. When you take on a passion, like my passion's forgiveness, you need what you teach, man. You know how that works. You need what you teach.
Definitely.
And, oh my gosh, we did a Kickstarter campaign. We raised 100 grand right away. And the goal was to get it done in a year. What a joke. Now, had I known that never could have happened, what a difficult task that was, and that was an unrealistic goal. And then I had to go through forgiving myself not getting it done, because I'm a get-it-done kind of gal. I am. I get stuff done. And this did not happen in a year's time. It did not happen in my timing. And here we are on year 4, and because we're making a movie, it's almost done. And it's been the best thing that could have happened. And I had to go through guilt, shame. It's not done. People emailing, why isn't this done? I've even put in $200,000 of my own money into this, because our social media reach has grown. There's so many things that have happened in creating we created a nonprofit. I didn't expect to make a nonprofit. I had no clue. I had no desire to start a nonprofit, but it became obvious that that's what needed to be done. So different things got shifted, and I had to just dance with it, which took a lot of forgiveness on my part, because even though I like to think I'm pretty flexible and I can dance, you know, being focused on achieving and saying I was going to get it done in a year, lots of guilt and shame, and had to forgive myself. And had I not gone through this journey of forgiveness, even for the film, we wouldn't be where we are now. We're reaching up to 35 million a month, 34 million. The movie's almost done. All the funding's in place to finish it. We just got to edit. We have one more shoot to do, and a lot of folks don't know this. I haven't even shared this on Facebook. We have the permission is this close. It's pretty much there. We just got to do some legalities to go into prison and have Gary and Tom talk. We're going to film that. And had I done this in a year's time, none of this would have happened in the film. None of these. And see, it's not just about me and getting a film done. You know, I look at the bigger picture. Tom and Gary need to meet again, you know. That's not about me. That's not about my agenda of getting a stupid movie done. You know, there's so many other pieces in place here, and allowing myself to grieve my loss of not getting done in the time that I wanted to get it done allowed the unfolding of all these other pieces. And I really feel like I'm floating downstream with this and going with the flow of what it's supposed to be. And it's happening beyond my wildest dreams. I never could have imagined it would be like this at this point. And forgiveness throughout this whole thing was part of the process, you know?
Yeah. I can imagine, like, just from hearing it, it sounds like the unfolding of the journey of Project Forgive is sort of an episode of divine timing, you know, allowing the conversations to unfold and for them to reconnect in a way that would be transformative within themselves again. You know, another layer of that forgiveness, I'd imagine, would stem from the conversation again.
Yeah, you know what's regrowing. So funny is we were originally going to do a full-length feature film we wanted to win an Oscar. And we decided to scale it back to TV. My expertise is in television. I've been in television for 20 years. I know I've gotten lots of shows on PBS. So I said, why not do what we know? Yeah. Because we were looking at investors. We were told we need $1 million. So we're in the investor conversation. Yeah. I've never been in investor conversations, okay? So we have documents made. We paid lawyers a lot of money to have these documents made. We get funders right away. But another problem unfolded that we never expected. Because our nonprofit, we are non-religious and nonpartisan. We do not ascribe to any religion. We come from the religion of kindness. We're looking at how do we bring people together rather than divisive conversations. And the sponsors and the investors that came on had religious agendas. So in order to receive their money, they wanted to have input in the direction of the documentary. And it wasn't feeling good to me. And that was a big dilemma for me. Like, okay, Sean, do you say yes to this money and just like in compromise? Or do you trust the process and kind of look bad that you're not getting it done, you know, in the time frame you wanted to say you wanted to get it done? And I remember one night, or it was early in the morning, it was like 4 a.m, I was out on my deck. I was in a lot of pain. I was crying. I was so upset. I'm like, why am I doing this? This is like 1.5 years in. And I'm a big Harry Potter fan. Are you a Harry Potter?
Harry Potter's great, isn't it?
I love That's Harry great. Potter. And I'm on the porch and I'm making it like a deal with God. And I'm saying, I'm mad. I'm like, you know, why are you having me do this crap? This is just crap. I'm busting my butt. I'm losing my butt. This is costing me a fortune. I don't know what to do next. And I was in a lot of pain. And I said, the only way I was dealing with God. The only way I'm moving forward is if a Patronus shows up right now. And Patronus, you know, they don't know we're here, right? Yeah. And I'm going to swear, sure as shit. A deer walked right up to me. I kid you not. And up to me means within 5 feet. I have woods behind my house and we get deer maybe once every couple of months. And it was shocking. It was just shocking. Incredible. And I needed that. And I've never looked back since that day. That I'm like, I got it. Okay, I'll play the game and I'll dance with this. I'll go with divine timing. I'll forgive myself of not knowing. I'm in the realm where I don't know crap here. I don't know what I'm doing. Sorry about the swearing. I don't swear in public very often.
Oh, that's
fine. Leave me alone, I'll swear, but that is tough. Sorry about that. But it was that cool, you know, when that happened, it was that freaking cool.
Yeah. It makes me think about the journey as a whole, the hero's journey and what it means to me really, because I think it's a journey of uncovering ourselves and aligning with who we are and what we truly want to create.
Yeah.
And along our journey, we face temptations, and temptations are these, what's described often by Joseph Campbell as monetary temptations that guide us off our path. They're not our true calling. So that was your temptation there, but you decided not to take those temptations because they weren't congruent with who you were as an individual. Yeah. On your journey. So.
Spot on, Andy. It didn't feel pure. And Project Forgive is so pure and so angelic and so clean. I don't feel like it's my project anymore. It's become a global project. And I do feel like I'm the keeper of congruency and integrity. And I hold myself to a very high standard of integrity and congruency. I'm not always perfect at it. But integrity is a big word for me. You know, that's why also at the same time, not being done on time, to use that as the same example, really, I had to really reconfigure what is integrity to me, because when you say you're going to do something, you do it. I mean, that's really the bottom line. And so I had to redefine what integrity was for this project. And the integrity became going with where exactly what I'm supposed to do with the divine timing, trusting the process, and having it not be all about Shawnee looking good. Right?
Excellent. No, that's good. If I was to ask you then, was there a moment in time when everything sort of shifted? You started to, you know, maybe the project shifted and you started to have this belief and everything sort of changed. Maybe it was early on before you went viral.
A couple of them. First one for sure was, excuse me, the Patronus, the deer showing up. Another one was last May, when I made the decision to pick up Project Forgive and my business. I have a very busy speaking business, and put them to the side and finish my PhD. I was almost done with my PhD, but I wasn't giving it the time and energy to get it done. And I was reaching deadlines to be complete. So I made that choice, and it was a difficult one. And it was the best thing I could have done, because I completed that, which was really important to me. And it also gave me time to think about and be with what are the directions for the movie, how do I want to market it. All of that has come together powerfully. Excellent. Over this last year. And we're rocking now. Like, I just finished my PhD in December. And I've accomplished more in the last 6 weeks than I've done in 3 years in terms of clarity, choices, decision making. Like, the clarity is there. That was a really big one. The other thing that happened with that too, and it's a difficult one to talk about. Pardon me, I'm just going to wipe my nose. It's a difficult one to talk about because it's brand new, and it's a very humbling thing. And right after I got my PhD, it was announced that I was nominated for Nobel Peace Prize. And this is in the last month. And that's like...
That's amazing.
That's like a wow. And the reason I'm so excited is because it really gives a lot of spotlight on Project Forgive and what we're doing. I'm like, just, I don't even have words. I'm so excited about it. It's very humbling. And it's also, it feels like another Patronus to me. Like, okay, you're on the right track. Good choice to finish that PhD. Good choice. You're on the right track. And even though I knew along the way, it's just really neat to get cemented validation, you know, in different realms. Yeah. Pardon me. So that was another significant piece.
And I wanted to say before I move on with the next question, congratulations with your PhD, obviously, and with the nomination for the Nobel Peace Prize, because that's just incredible. It's just it must bring that warm feeling, obviously, because what I love about what you're sharing there is that it's not about the Nobel Peace Prize. It's not about the amazing success. It's what will come from it for Project Forgive and the work that you're paying forward, you know, to others.
Yeah. And at the same time, like, really straight conversation, like, wow, a Nobel Peace Prize. How do you be with that? How do you be with that? Yeah. And I'm in that inquiry, you know, and I'm in that inquiry. Yeah.
So I always find once you could say that's the end of your journey, and I know you've got a lot of stages left to go with the final release of the film and everything. If I was to ask you though, who would you describe yourself as today after going through this journey of forgiveness and Project Forgive and the Nobel Peace Prize and your PhD and everything as it culminates and it comes together.
You know,
how would you describe yourself?
The main word that comes up is the word unlimited. That's my word this year, is unlimited. And it's so funny. I'm at the stage of my life where I don't even have like goals. I know this is going to sound weird. I'm a big Esther Hicks fan, Abraham fan. I don't know if you know who Esther Hicks is. Yeah. I love her.
Yeah, I love that story.
Yeah, and she said something that, and I love listening to her because sometimes when I listen to her, I'm like, oh, I have to listen to that again. And I remember her saying, you know, it's good to want, because I love wanting things. What do you want? And usually the reason you want something is because you think it's going to make you happy. Yeah, want something because you think it's going to make you happy. And what I've discovered over time is sometimes when I want something and I get it, it doesn't make me happy. It's like, yeah. Okay. So this, how I would describe myself as someone who wants everything unlimited, and I could care less what that is, because I've learned over time the things that I think I want don't make me happy. And I really trust the process that the things that I'm wanting, or at least the ideas of what I'm wanting, they come to fruition beyond my wildest dreams. And it really helps with attachment. Like I can really let stuff go.
Yeah. I love it. And I know you've answered this question throughout the whole of the interview. And it's really after going through your journey, facing all those challenging obstacles, trials and tribulations, and really going even through looking at your first, you know, approach to forgiveness when you had that, you know, traumatic incident in your life. I said, who would you describe yourself as today? But why do you do what you do after going through all of that journey now then, if I could ask you that?
Yeah, and my answer would be, there's one would be, who knows? And the other one would be, because I'm happy. But one would be, who knows? That's the mystery of the universe. And the other one is, because I have. That's why I'm here. I just know.
Excellent. Definitely. And that comes back to that really deep calling within yourself to actually, you know, seek forgiveness within yourself, all the way back from that traumatic event. And then that pivotal moment when sadly Gary had the incident and everything, you know, shifted for you. Is there anything else you wanted to share on that's, any lessons that you had passed on to others that are maybe seeking forgiveness or even looking to forgive others or forgive a situation?
Sure. Let me just ask, because I thought we were done in a half an hour. Is this longer than a half an hour? Because it's helping me with timing. How's that? And what I'm going to share.
Okay. Yeah. We usually go for another 10, 15 minutes. Okay, but good. If we've not got time, don't worry.
Oh, no. I just wanted to make sure because probably the biggest, to make sure that I have time, because I wanted to honor your time and your time schedule for the show.
Thanks.
Probably the biggest piece of advice I could give, or the thing that speaks to me the most, is the technology or the skill sets that we train at Project Forgive, and it's accepting the apology you'll never receive. Accepting the apology you'll never receive. And that we find globally. Wherever we do this training or wherever we talk about it, it makes the biggest impact. And would it be okay if I talked about that for a few minutes?
Go for it. Yeah, definitely.
So I always, this mastery of the skill of accepting the apology you'll never receive came from my neighbor. And I have this neighbor that I just look at him and I just go, oh, he's one of those people. You probably have one in your life. Like, as soon as you see him, you're annoyed. You're like, oh, you want to run the other way. Or it's like, oh, please, I hope I don't have to talk to him. Blah, blah. I don't care how evolved you are. We all have people like that in our lives. Well, Bob, the neighbor, is mine. And I'll give you an example. Like, I'll go out to get the mail, and I'll see him, and he'll say, good morning, Sean. And I'll say, I know, Bob, but it's 6 o'clock in the evening. And he'll say, I know, but you look like you just got up. It's like,
yeah.
Okay. So, you know. And so every time I'd see him, I could just feel this whoosh of annoyed. And I had a hard time with that, especially with my expertise in gossip, because people talk about things that they experience. And if this neighbor's experience is that I'm an angry person, I'm an angry person every time I talk to him. I'm like annoyed and angry. So his experience of me is an annoyed, angry person. And I'm not an annoyed, angry person. With certain people, yeah, it shows up. Yeah. And I said, you know, I have a problem with that. What would happen if I could shift that on a dime? Not change him. We have no power to change him. He is who he is.
Yeah.
What I do have the power, though, to change how I respond to him. And what would be a practical use to actually cause something to change in the moment? So that's where we came up with this conversation of accepting the apology you'll never receive. And it goes like this. As soon as I see Bob, what I do in my mind's eye is I imagine what he would say to me if he were apologizing for his behavior. What would he say? He'd say, I'm so sorry. I say the stupidest things. I am actually an idiot sometimes. I lack social skills. I'm so awkward socially. You can see it in the neighborhood. Most of the neighbors avoid me like the plague. I am so awkward socially. And the truth is, I really just really, really, really want you to love me. And I'm trying to find a way to connect. And this is the only way I know how. Limited. I know how limited it is. I wish I wasn't so limited, but I am. Will you forgive me? And I, will you just love me? Now, as soon as I do something like that in my mind's eye, I shift on a dime with this neighbor. I actually calm myself down. I get out of my hook of fear. Annoyed is fear. Anger is fear. And I get nice and calm. And I actually can shift who I'm being on a dime in that moment. And it's a masterful skill. It doesn't, every time I see him, although it's getting better, it's been a couple of years now, I'm getting softer and more compassionate when I see him because I'm becoming masterful at this skill with him in particular. Do I have it mastery in other areas of my life? Absolutely. Is it extra hard when you're hooked by someone with a trigger? Absolutely. And that's where you need it the most. But, and it's so funny because we spend so much time in our families and our systems trying to change other people. When actually, when you do this kind of internal work, that's when shifts actually happen. So that is a practice I would highly, highly recommend. And we do activities around that so you can get practice at it and get really, really good at it.
Excellent. Well, thank you for sharing that story. It's it's an interesting one where people come up in our lives and we have to learn from them. Every individual is a place of learning, really. Mm-hmm. Learning who we are and learning how we respond in certain situations or learn how to be, you know. Where can we find out more about Project Forgive then as a, so that we can pass on our funding or we can find out more about the movie coming up?
Yeah. So two places. Come find us on Facebook. Come join the conversation. It's beautiful what's happening on Facebook. We're reaching millions there. The dialogue is amazing. It's just go on Facebook and type in Project Forgive. And our website, I'm excited to say too, our new website's about to launch. It's almost done. And you can donate, make a difference there. And you'll get lots of updates on the movie both at our website and also on Facebook. And our goal right now, and I feel pretty safe to say it, Andy, I haven't said it out loud yet, we really want to make the movie free. And this stuff that I've shot for this film, It's an Inquiry of Forgiveness, is some of the best stuff I've ever shot. I've won a lot of awards as a producer, a lot of Emmys. And this is the best stuff I've ever shot. It is breathtaking.
Yeah.
And it's an inquiry of what is forgiveness? What does it mean to you? And that's what our PBS film explores. Yeah. So our website, projectforgive.com, and Facebook.
That's it. Excellent. Well, I'd just like to say thank you again for joining me. It's been a real pleasure and a privilege as always. I had the honor to obviously interview you in the past and have you come over to the UK and talk about forgiveness on a very pivotal day again. I thought that was quite a remarkable day for it to be on. But yeah, I do really appreciate your time sharing forgiveness.
It was September 11th that we did that, wasn't it?
Yeah, September 11th. Yeah. It's quite a pivotal day, wasn't it? I thought anyway, it's very, you know, moving with the group that were there at the time.
Yeah. So. My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Andy. And I love how you share and generate and cause Project Forgive. You're such a sweet man.
It's a real pleasure. So I will say thank you again for joining me. And if you are listening to this on a podcast, if you're listening to a recording or even watching it on YouTube, all the links to Project Forgive for a website, Sean's website, and also the Facebook page will all be below the video itself. So you can donate, you can watch the video when it's released and you can enjoy the unfolding of the final legs of the project.
Sounds good.
So thanks again. And, we're live again next week at 8 PM Greenwich Mean Time and 3 PM Eastern Time. So if you'd like to tune in live, it would be a real pleasure and privilege to see you. Thanks again for listening and I'll see you all soon. Bye for now.
The Entrepreneur's Journey. Create your empowering business story. Interviewing successful entrepreneurs from around the world to share their inspiring journey to success. Tune in live every week for your weekly dose of inspiration. Visit www.theentrepreneursjourney.tv for previous episodes.